You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
In 1979, the Sandinista National Liberation Front, the FSLN, toppled the dictatorship of Somoza. People around the world cheered the victory. The U.S. then fueled a destructive, bloody, and protracted war to sabotage this revolution, and in 1989 the Sandinistas lost power. But now, 20 years later, Daniel Ortega, as leader of the FSLN, is the elected president of Nicaragua. What policies is he pursuing? We've reached Helen Dixon, a feminist activist, writer, and photographer. She's a longtime resident in Nicaragua, and we're going to explore that question with her. Good morning, Helen, and welcome back to Red Eye.
Good morning. Hello to everybody listening at Co-op Radio that may have known me when I lived in Canada.
In 1979, the Sandinista victory was heralded by anti-imperialist forces in Latin America in particular, but elsewhere, of course. How do these same forces now respond to the Ortega government?
Well, I mean, recently, the Ortega government's been actually losing quite a lot of credibility internationally as well as, obviously, internally. The Sandinista population is basically split between people who support Daniel Ortega, being called Danielistas, and the Sandinista opposition, which is has got several different kind of expressions. And on an international level, recently it's really noticeable that the Cuban government has been completely silent on the situation in Nicaragua, and even Chavez, who has been like the main supporter of Ortega and has financed his political campaigns and everything, is now starting to distance himself somewhat. So even though, obviously, on a strategic level in Latin America, it's important for Chavez to have what is perceived as being a left-wing government.
You have been particularly active in the Nicaraguan feminist movement. What is the Ortega government actions in, what are they in relation to the women's movement?
Well, this is one of the reasons why many of us feel that it can no longer be called even a left-wing government or a progressive government, because as well as the banning of abortion and the reduction of penalties for crimes against women, violent crimes against women, which the Frente has been completely complicit with, on top of this, last year, once Ortega got into power, basically, he started to move directly against organized feminists and also critical journalists. So right now for the women's movement, not only did he move against specific feminist leaders, but he accused, first of all, a Oxfam GB-administered fund of doing money laundering in order to try to take away some of the resources that go into the women's movement to defend women's rights. He also accused Grupo Venancio, which is a group I was directly involved in founding in the beginning of the 90s, and a list of about 15 other organizations, as well as the autonomous women's movement itself. We just got the news, I think yesterday, in the papers, that the money laundering accusation has now been left to one side, and what they're going to do is accuse the people on this list of financing criminal acts, which now they're considering that anybody who's in favor publicly of therapeutic abortion is now going to be considered to be criminal. So what they're going to do is actually take it to the courts, which unfortunately are pretty much controlled by the government. And they're kind of focusing in on a series of leaders, but behind it is the whole of the women's movement, basically, because they just want to shut us up, basically. And a lot of this is perceived as being vengeance for the fact that the women's movement supported Soy La America Narváez, who is his is Daniel Ortega's stepdaughter, who accused him of sexual abuse in 1998.
You're also part of the Nicaraguan cultural movement. What relations exist there between prominent cultural figures and the Ortega government?
Well, Ernesto Cardenal has been one of the most outspoken people who, especially from, you know, old-time Sandinista, ex-Trappist, well, monk and very well-known poet, right? He has been really direct and outspoken about the situation with the Ortega government, because it's not only an attack on women. The way that Ortega is managing his power as a sort of bully figure, it's becoming sort of more and more dictatorial in the way that he's managing the government, and he's put his wife and his family in key positions of political and economic power. So Cardenal has been very outspoken about this, and so what they did was they revived an old claim that somebody had made against Cardenal over a land dispute, which really doesn't have much, you know, it had no fundaments, no sort of legal basis to it, and it had been left to one side and it never was resolved. They've taken that up again, and they tried to accuse him legally of, you know, not obeying the courts, and he was actually threatened with going to jail at a certain point, but they backed off, obviously, because he's such a well-known international figure. There was a major campaign internationally, and people really important writers on an international level sort of said this is absolutely absurd, and on top of that, very dangerous. So, but that's the kind of environment we're in now, where the freedom of expression is really under attack. Also, very recently, Sergio Ramírez has also been censored from a book that he had written, the preface of a book on one of the country's most interesting and well-known poets, Carlos Martínez Rivas. And this was to be published in Madrid, but the government has the rights over Martínez Rivas' work. And they basically tried to veto the Ramírez's preface, because Ramírez has also been an outspoken left opposition figure. So, I mean, in the cultural community, everybody is kind of waiting to see what happens this year, because if they're willing to come down on people as well-known as Ernesto Cardenal and Sergio Ramírez, sort of less known poets and writers and artists, are really, you know, in for a hard time this year, probably.
And recently there were municipal elections in many parts of Nicaragua, not the whole country, but large sections of it. How would you characterize the conduct of these elections?
Well, it's been really violent and confrontational and quite dangerous, I think. The municipal elections, because the Frente right now is in power, and they'd already sort of made pacts in the past with Arnaldo Alemán, who's this very right-wing, corrupt ex-president, they eliminated all other opponents except for the PLC, basically, and an offshoot of the PLC, which is Alemán's party, which is a right-wing party. But they eliminated the MRS as the opposition, and they did the Liberal Party a favor by eliminating the Conservative Party, which is a sort of another right-wing competition for the Liberals. So it was basically they've been narrowing it down to a bi-party system. And in the municipal elections, the Frente controlled it right from within the electoral council. So they're controlling at this point the people who, you know, make the rules basically for the whole process. So there's a very interesting documentary that was done by Esta Semana, which is a program run by Carlos Fernando Chamorro, who used to be the editor of Veritate in the 80s, which describes in detail, it's on the internet, exactly how they pulled off the fraud. But it's very, very widely recognized that it was fraud. They got rid of national observers. I mean, they prepared it well ahead of time. The problem is that in the process of that, there were, you know, just direct, violent confrontations in the streets. One of the things that they've done is they've organized these groups called the CPCs, which are the Councils for Citizens' Participation. And in Managua, they had these CPCs, after there'd been demonstrations against the government and the different roundabouts in the city. And so the CPCs took over these roundabouts, and doing what was called prayer against hatred, because, you know, the whole thing's involved with this very religious discourse as well. And anyway, these CPCs then started to attack other parties who were campaigning in Managua, and then those parties attacked the CPCs. So we started to have these, like, frontal battles. That was during the campaign, and then the elections actually happened the results were totally distorted, and they refused to take up the scrutineers information and, you know, revise everything. And now what we're looking at is, just yesterday or the day before yesterday, there were street battles in this one small municipality in the Masaya area, and then yesterday or the day before yesterday, some people actually torched a mayor's office in a small municipality in the north. And, you know, the problem is that people are getting more and more angry, the situation is getting more and more polarized, there's no kind of legitimacy in terms of the institutions, and that means that people start fighting on the streets. And what happens is the leaders of the two major parties use this to pressure each other to make agreements on a top level. So you've got the top leaders making an agreement, and you've got people starting to go into a kind of war mentality in the streets. So I think it's really quite a dangerous situation right now.
The Ortega government has initiated, with considerable fanfare, a number of social programs they claim that address the huge problems of poverty in the country, particularly in the rural areas. One of these is called Hambre Zero, No Hunger. What is the reality, in your view, of that program?
Well, I mean, the first thing I would say to that is that anybody who has a left-wing vision cannot only restrict themselves to sort of having a vision that's limited to small economic programs in the first place. In the second place, most of the economic programs are kind of fragmented, and there's been no kind of programmatic plan for national development, even on an economic level. The other part of it is that a lot of the ways in which the money that's coming from Venezuela, which is a lot of the money that's coming in, and even governmental money that's come from international cooperation, has been channeled into programs that tend to be passed through these CPC structures, which is a parallel structure, basically, that violates municipal law, because in the municipal law there's already room for citizen participation. They've created these councils for citizens' participation right from the top down and through party structures. And so most of the people in those structures are party-loyal people and people who are looking to get whatever they can out of it. So Hambre Cero, for example, has been channeled directly through those structures. And what this means is the Frente is using Hambre Cero as a way of creating a client base, right? It's a common phenomenon. It was used by the PRI in Mexico a lot as well. On the other hand, there are some improvements. For example, teachers are being a little better paid. But the problem is that economic advance is okay, but if you don't have at the same time political freedoms and social freedom and freedom to organize and freedom to express yourself and freedom as women, well, then the advances are questionable, because part of the problem is the discourse about the poor in Spanish is los pobres. And I think sometimes our dear government forgets that half of the poor population is women. And so when they violate women's rights, even if they send out, which is basically kind of chicken feed, frankly, through the Hambre Cero program, they're forgetting about the complex nature of how poverty is inserted into the communities and how people's rights, people's basic rights, and especially women's basic rights, are directly linked to their levels of poverty or their ability to improve. So that's the problem I see, is that the most of the economic advances, it's being channeled to the Frente lines in the party interests, instead of having a kind of national vision or a community vision that would really allow serious sustainable development to actually happen.
What hopeful signs would you point to in the country?
Well, I'm not feeling very optimistic right now, but I do think the interesting thing that's happened in the last few years is there's been a kind of reawakening of the younger generation after a sort of period of very consumerist urban culture and a very silenced, unorganized rural culture. I think there's a younger generation, mostly university student age right now, who is starting to question the way that the Frente is acting and starting to question whether or not it's a left-wing government. I think it's important that that the left opposition maintain a distance from right-wing from the sort of right-wing opposition. There's a certain kind of strategic alliance or tactical alliance that the MRS has entered into, but I think they've lost a lot of credibility for that. The MRS is the Movement for Sandinista Renovation, that it's one of the older non-Frente Sandinista groups. But I think still it's quite fragmented. I think the feminist movement and the women's movement still is in a sort of better position to create alliances with these young people and newer people. But I think, you know, for hope, I mean, we need to get more stuff happening through arts and cultural expression and try to consolidate the organization that's there. And I think the accusation right now against women, the fact that it's been transferred to the whole issue of therapeutic abortion, may actually help to get women back out on the streets and say, you know, if you're going to arrest these leaders, well, for defending therapeutic abortion, well, you might as well send us all to jail. That's basically the situation we're in.
Well, thank you very much for taking time this morning, Helen, and the best of luck to you in the difficult situations you face
there. Okay, well, thank you for interest in the situation, and hopefully people in Canada will keep tuned in, and I recommend people check out in the internet. Most of the Nicaraguan media is now in the internet, and you can keep tabs on what's going on.
Great. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Helen Dixon in Matagalpa. She is a feminist activist, a writer, and photographer. She's been a longtime resident of Nicaragua.